This is my first talk back in Second Life, and it's good to be back. A little bit unprepared. I was just confirmed yesterday that I'd be giving a talk today, so well, I'm happy to be back, and it's good to see so many people interested in such things as this. Now, the reason I thought I'd talk today about peace, love, and happiness is specifically because this is this place is what it is, that Second Life is a place that we come to get these very worthwhile qualities, that we come here looking for peace, we come here looking for love, we come here looking for happiness. And so this isn't exactly the way I would frame a talk about Buddhism, but I think it's useful for all of us, because when you give a talk, you give a talk for a certain audience. So we come to Second Life, we're looking for peace. Or we come here, and this is why we stay, or this is what we gain from being here. We gain peace of mind that comes from getting away from our lives, and we realize that it's maybe an escape, but it does give us this quality of being free from the troubles and the cares of everyday life, being free from the stress. We have this peace. You know, I think this is obvious to all of us as we sit here in the Deer Park, or most of us in our everyday life would probably be very hard pressed to find a deer park nearby. Of course, there may be some who have it, but for many of us, this is a welcome break from city life and so on. Actually, it's funny, the owl in the background here has the same sound as an owl that's just outside my door every night. So actually, you can find this sort of peace in everyday life, but Second Life kind of gives us this quick and easy escape into nature and into peaceful, magical or otherwise liberating environment. But it's important to understand, and as Buddhists, we probably all are thinking that this sort of peace is a very external sort of peace, and also a very temporary sort of peace. It's something that can actually get in the way of our spiritual progress if we become addicted to it. Why? Because it becomes a contrast to real life. It becomes a contrast to our everyday situation, which is often full of stressful, unpleasant experiences. And, you know, well, it'd be nice to be able to just slip into the computer and not come out. You know, like that movie Avatar. I didn't watch it, but I heard this. They learned how to slip into their avatars and not come back. We don't have the technology here yet. I think Linden Labs is working on it, but at the moment, it's still not possible. And so we have to go back to our real lives. And this isn't a problem. It shouldn't be a problem. For Buddhists, it certainly shouldn't be considered a problem, because we have a way out. We have this escape. We have this liberation. But it's not something that comes from running away from situations. It comes from letting go of them. It comes from freeing ourselves from the stresses, from the problems. See, the only reason that things in our everyday life are giving us this impetus to get away and to escape into an alternate reality is because of our inability to understand and our inability to accept and our inability to live with them, our inability to find peace in the situation. It comes from our approach, our reaction to the experiences, to our everyday lives. So Buddhism is something that, well, it doesn't detract from these escapes. Many Buddhist meditations are a form of escape, of temporary vacation from everyday reality, and you can even leave your body in certain Buddhist meditations, or fly away to heaven, or go to see faraway places. You can enter into visualization exercises where suddenly your mind expands to visualize the whole of the cosmos. And these are not considered wrong by any means, but Buddhism then uses that as a stepping stone, and it can use a place like Second Life as a stepping stone, because we come here and we have great peace. Our minds are not distracted. We're not disturbed by stressful experiences or stressful interactions. And so it gives us a chance to slow down and to start to think and start to open up our minds and see things more objectively and look at how our mind works. So we use all of these experiences, they're not considered to be a obstacle to practice, they're a stepping stone. Where then we would take a place like this and we start to look at our own minds, right? We forget about what's going on. We don't pay attention to our troubles. We say, okay, put them aside for now. Let's look at what's going on in our minds and look at how our minds work. And if we're good at this, if we really put our hearts into this, we can really gain the tools that are necessary to bring the peace back into our daily lives so that it's not just peaceful here, but then when the little stresses come up, we don't turn them into big stresses. When interactions with other people or situations start to make us stressed out, we're able to understand them, or we're able to understand what's going on in our minds. This is the essence of Buddhist practice is this sort of meditation, we call it. It means investigating the experience. So here we're all sitting here, and we haven't left reality behind. We haven't left our minds back in real life. We brought them with us. And so you can ask yourself, what's going on in my mind right now? Maybe some of you are happy to be here and happy to be listening to a talk on Buddhism. Maybe some of you are unhappy and think that what I'm saying is a whole crock of of bull. And so there'll be all sorts of judgments going on in the mind, and these are really at the core of our stress, our problems, the core of our suffering. The reason why we suffer in life is these very is because of the extrapolation and making more of things than they actually are, judging and turning something's turning mountains and turning molehills into mountains, so that when someone comes and says something to us, then it becomes a grievance towards ourselves. And or when we see something, or we come in contact with something pleasurable, then it becomes something that we must have, and we chase after it. So Buddhism is really the practice of acceptance, of understanding, that allows us to accept, that allows us to experience, that allows us to live without judging. And so we do this by penetrating into the nature of the experience. So when we're sitting here and there arises a happy feeling, we know that it's a happy feeling. We don't say, this is good, this is bad. We don't say, this is me, this is mine, or I like this, or let it stay, or make it go, or so on. We just know that we're happy. When we're unhappy, we know that we're unhappy. When we like something, we know that we like something. When we penetrate into the reality, we start to figure out how our mind works. We start to see the relationships between mind states, so that when we like something, then there arises an addiction to it. When there's a happy feeling, it gives rise to liking. When there's an unhappy feeling, it gives rise to disliking. When there's disliking, then we get angry, and so on. When we get angry, then we suffer. And so learning how our mind works, coming to bring about this change that allows us to accept things, which we can then take into our daily life. So this is the Buddhist idea of where we find true peace. It's not simply in getting away for a short time. Getting away for a short time is considered to be helpful and often necessary to bring about the change. But we have to make use of this. There are many people who come to Second Life and obviously don't find any sort of enlightenment. I think this is, maybe there's only a few of them, but I imagine there are a few people here in Second Life who don't find enlightenment. Maybe more than a few. There's probably a lot of people who come and don't find peace. They find rather excitement and addiction and so on. So this is the sort of how I would approach the idea of coming to find peace, coming to get away. And that if we really want to get away, we have to be prepared to face, be prepared to overcome rather than push away and chase away and run away. Next is the idea of love, and I think any talk about virtual reality of this sort has to incorporate the idea of love, because I think it's a big part of what has spurred on the internet or funded the internet, and it's certainly a big part of what has funded Second Life, is this idea of love, this idea of relationships with other beings, with other people. And I've touched on this before, but I'm sure there are many people who haven't heard it, and it's always worth repeating that we often confuse love, this idea of wanting other beings to be happy, with the idea of attachment, with the concept of attachment. So we say, I love that person, or I love this person, but often it's simply a physical or even a mental attachment to the idea that they're going to make us happy. And these are really two very, very, very different emotions. Attachment is something that I would consider to be negative. It says, I want you to make me happy, or how are you going to make me happy, or it expects some level of take. And love, on the other hand, is always saying, how can I make you happy? And so if we look around this room, around this campfire, and we can ask ourselves, you know, when we came in here and as we started talking to each other, or even what was going through our minds as we started looking around at each other, what were we thinking? Were we thinking, gee, how can I make these people happy? What can I do to make them really feel good, to make them really feel at peace, to make them really feel alive? Or were we thinking, what am I going to get out of this? And we should be able to see that we generally have a combination of these two, but that they are very, very different. Attachment is something which shrinks, which contracts the spirit, which contracts the mind into a sort of clingy, shriveled up state, which is not really happy at all. It's not really at peace. And it's certainly not a state of love. And yet this is often, most of the time, all that we get out of a place like Second Life, because we fail to go the next step. We fail to take it to a more unadulterated sort of love, where we are looking at people and thinking, gosh, this person has suffering. This person is stressed out. This person has problems. What can I do to make them happy? What can I do to bring them peace? And this is why it's always nice to be a teacher, because you always have this chance to give someone happiness. And of course, the problem with that is, the more we want to teach, the more attachment we have, thinking that it's going to bring us happiness, and how. And so we try to go out and teach people and give them all sorts of advice and so on, and we find that they usually don't take kindly to our advice because they can see that we're only doing it for our own benefit. It's not easy being a teacher. It's not easy really giving people something useful. I don't claim to be good at it. But I think with practice, I've at least been able to give people some things. And I think this is a very important sort of love that we can have for each other, this idea of giving people something. We look at people and we try to give them something. We try to do what we can for them. Doesn't mean we have to go around proselytizing. I hate people who proselytize. I've done it a lot myself in the past. It's often involuntary, and it's certainly not out of love. It's out of this attachment and this greed. If you really want to help people, you have to be honest and sincere, and you have to really have love in your heart. See, it's not something that we all have. Most of us have to work really hard at developing real and true love. But of course, it's so much more rewarding, infinitely more rewarding than attachment. You can go through Second Life, you can go through the internet. I used to when I was a teenager, and you can go looking for all sorts of enticing things and on of various levels of morality. And you can ask yourself, you can be promiscuous, you can be indulgent, you can become addicted to so many different things. And then ask yourself how much happiness, how much contentment, how much peace, how much freedom from suffering it's brought you. And you can see how really it just makes you crazy. It just brings more and more suffering. And so, considering how important this is for most people, and how it's often the impetus, one of the real impetuses for coming to a place like this, I think it's important that we not stop just at trying to get what we want all the time, but trying to give other people something that is really useful for them. And the Buddha was pretty clear, actually, which surprises many people. He was very clear that one should always strive for one's own benefit. He said one should never put another person's benefit above one's own. And you can think of how shocking this might be, considering how selfless Buddhism is supposed to be. But here's the key, is that you can say that, you love people because of how great it makes you feel, or you give to people, or you share with others, or you do good things for how great it makes you feel. But the reason that it makes you feel so great is because it's actually helping others, and you know that, because it's pure. It's the purity of mind that comes from love that is such a great thing. And so the point being that going around and chasing after sensual pleasures is not looking out for your best interest. It's not really making you happy. And if someone really wants to look out for their best interest, then they should open up their minds and open up their hearts to this state of pure love, and really try to help people, to give people something useful for themselves. So this, I think, is an important point that we should consider on the idea of love. The final sort of overarching theme that I'd like to discuss today, bring up, is the idea of happiness. And happiness is probably the most contentious. I've had arguments about the meaning of the word happiness. And many people think, it seems, that happiness is something that is totally arbitrary, that what makes me happy is possibly not what's going to make you happy. And therefore, I guess the implication is that you can never come up with a satisfactory, or happiness is something that we should never really approach or discuss or try to strive towards or formalize into a sort of a system that brings us happiness. And nonetheless, I'd argue that happiness can be broken up. It can be at least broken up into two categories. And the one category is that category that says that you have to agree that forever to each their own, that happiness is really a subjective experience. So you could call this subjective happiness. But this sort of happiness is the happiness that is external to ourselves. It's the happiness that depends on objects. And why this is subjective, why it is so impossible to pin down what's going to make someone happy, is because this sort of happiness is totally dependent on our experience and our conditioning, not just in this life, if you can confine to this life, but actually even over the countless lifetimes that we've been running through samsara, that we've been running around. And you can see this when we come to second life. If you were to click, I suppose, even in this circle, though this looks like a fairly comparatively conservative group of people. When I came yesterday, there were a couple of half-naked women sitting here, and I don't see any today, so I'm a bit relieved as a monk. Maybe they knew it was a monk giving the talk, so they put clothes on or didn't come or something. But if you look at the profiles of the various people, you can see that to each their own, it's really true. There's a lot of people who come here for fairly exotic pleasures. And if you look at the histories of those people, if you look at their background, you can see the relationship very clearly that to each their own. We develop these likes and these predilections over time. And this is really, I think, what the majority of people in the world are hooked upon. It's probably why most people come to Second Life. It's why most people surf the internet. And I think we're all guilty of it. Until we become perfectly enlightened, we still have this attachment to sensuality. When we see beautiful things, we chase after them. And so we come to a place like this looking for sensual pleasure, wanting to see beautiful things, wanting to hear beautiful sounds and smells and tastes and feelings and thoughts. Now, this kind of happiness, of course, most especially from a Buddhist perspective, is limited and is adulterated, or it's problematic. It's something which is not the be-all and end-all of happiness, that you can't just get more and subsequently get more happiness. And I've talked about why this is before as well. This isn't a particular Buddhist teaching, but if you look at the biology of addiction, you can see how true it is that when we get the things that we like, when we come in here to Second Life and we see and we hear and we smell, and we chase after these beautiful experiences or beautiful phenomena, when we get them, there's this chemical reaction that goes on in the brain when it knows that it's got what it wants. It releases certain chemicals, and these chemicals bring about a sensation which is interpreted by the mind as pleasurable. The mind then likes it and start the cycle again, looking for more of the same. Except what happens in the brain is it's kind of like a stretching, you could say. It doesn't exactly stretch, but it's like when you stretch a piece of cloth or something, and it eventually gets stretched out of shape. This is sort of what happens to the brain, that the brain starts to get stretched out of shape. What it means is it's not able to produce the same amount of chemical. And so next time you get what you want, there's less of the chemical and less of the sensation, and then the mind doesn't feel as happy. It doesn't feel as happy because it's not getting what it wanted, which is this chemical reaction. And you see how this plays out, that, you know, in the beginning it's just an innocent sort of looking, and then it has to be a you know, getting something more intense. Well, maybe first we see a picture and we think, oh, that's beautiful, and then we have to see the video, and then we think, oh, that's beautiful, and so on and so on. And so until finally it just gets to the point where, just as with a drug addict, you wind up in a state of withdrawal, not being able to get what you want, and you have a choice. You can either start working your way back, climbing your way back to a more ordinary state of physical and mental activity, or you go on until finally something breaks, you kill yourself, or you break down and suffer tragically. We see this with drug addicts. We can also see it with ourselves when we're in our everyday lives or here in Second Life, and we just keep looking. We just keep chasing after these things. And this is not considered to be ultimate and true happiness. And as was said earlier, a comment someone made was that these things are, especially happiness, is very difficult to gain in space-time reality. And I think this is very true, that as long as our happiness is based on something external to ourselves, something ephemeral, something that comes and goes, then we're never going to hope to be able to be satisfied by it. So again, I'm going to encourage everyone, based on the Buddhist teachings, to go the next step and to ask yourself what is really and truly going on, that it is that makes us happy. Well, what we're seeing is that our happiness is dependent on things like the brain, the chemicals that come and go in the brain, which in turn is dependent on things that we see and that we hear and that we smell and that we taste, that we feel, and that we think. And if we were to somehow be able to pull ourselves away from that, to let go of that, let's say, and just be happy, to be happy in and of ourselves, to have our happiness not dependent on something that is impermanent, something that is coming and going, to actually find that which is stable, that which is permanent, that which is lasting, then I think we'd all agree that we'd have then a happiness which was not only truly happy in the sense of being able to satisfy us, but also universal, where it being stable, it being secure, that everyone would have to agree that this is the greatest happiness. And so in Buddhism, this is really what we're striving for. It's not some specific point that we instantaneously attain, or we struggle very hard and then somehow poof, we arise there. It's something which comes gradually. And the way it works is as we slowly let go of those things that we thought were bringing us happiness and that are bringing us only more and more addiction and taking us further and further away from a stable state of existence, we start to attain this very thing. We start to attain something that we thought we already had. You know, most of us think that we're ordinary individuals and we have a fairly stable state of mind, which is secure and permanent and lasting and so on. But once we start to look closer, we can see that actually the average person is in many ways not dissimilar from an insane individual, a person who has, in fact, you could say we all in some way have mental illness, in the sense of our minds not being totally and perfectly healthy. See, most of us think of ourselves as having good mental health, and yet we would all agree, we would all admit that we have things which are a sign of mental instability. We have these stresses, we have these worries, we have these fears, we have all of the neurotic characteristics of an insane individual to a greater or lesser extent. And of course, for most of us, it's to a lesser extent. But what Buddhism seeks to achieve is a greater and greater state of stability and equilibrium, equanimity in our minds, where we no longer chase after good things and no longer run away from bad things, where we're able to see things as they are. And through the meditation, as we start to penetrate and start to look and start to accept and start to acknowledge things just for what they are, not saying, oh, that's bad or oh, that's good, that we start to let go and our minds start to settle down and our minds start to see clearly, start to give up, start to let go, and start to just be. And once we're able to just be, then we are truly happy. Then we're in a state where no matter what comes, whether we're in Second Life or out chasing whatever in the world, running the rat race and living amongst such great external suffering, we can still be at great peace and happiness internally. And of course, this is may sound very much pie in the sky and hard to achieve and so on, but this is why I say it's not something that is like a mountain peak where you have to get to the top before you experience the happiness. It's like the climbing up the mountain that we can do in our daily lives. And so whereas being totally and perfectly happy all the time might be unattainable for most of us, we can at the very least see very clear, solid, concrete results on a day-to-day basis as we practice. If you practice for one day, then you can see that you've gained one day's worth of happiness, or you've gained one step further, a day's worth of steps towards this goal of being free from suffering and being at true peace and happiness. And I think these are all related. The idea of peace is, of course, very much tied in with the idea of happiness. Love in Buddhism, as I said, is not exactly core. The point being that love is something that comes from being pure. It's something that comes from being at peace with yourself. When you're truly happy and truly at peace with yourself, then you have no need for other people to make you happy. And all you can think of when people come is how you can make them happy. You see that they're suffering and you can feel the stress that's in them that is absent in you. And so you're able to give them this rope, so to speak, and pull them. You're able to send them the line and bring them, explain to them or to lead them in your direction simply by calling to them and showing them the way. So I think these three things are going to be very useful in terms of explaining and kind of opening people up to a higher and a more pure and a more unadulterated experience of each of them. So that's what I thought I would talk about today. Again, as I said, I'm a little bit unprepared, so I hope it wasn't... I'm a little rusty, I suppose. But I thank you all for coming, and I hope it's been at least a bit enlightening for at least some of you. Thank you all for coming, and hope to see you next time. If you have any questions, I'm happy to take them now.